Good afternoon, and thank you for joining me for the Friday, January 10th reading of East Valley News, featuring the towns of Scottsdale and Paradise Valley. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer reader, Chris Rosewell. The first article today is from the Scottsdale Progress. It's titled, Light Meetings Week Ahead as 2025 Begins, by Tom Scanlon. Like a bear yawning awake from hibernation, city administration is slowly rolling into the new year. City Council, led by new Mayor Lisa Borowski, does not meet for the first 2 weeks of 2025. The Library Board holds its first meeting of the year at 3 p.m. Wednesday, January 8th. The meeting takes place at the Mustang Library, 10101 North 90th Street. In his monthly report, Library Director Michael Beck will begin the meeting with a summary and review of library patron comments. Comments, suggestions from patrons include, need more 50-cent paperbacks, especially with school break upon us. Would you be willing to offer a class on the book paper folding? The samples in the Civic Center bookstore are amazing, and I would be very interested in taking a class. Love, love, love the Little Tots program. I want to commend staff members, names redacted, for their patience, wisdom, and customer service. As an older person, not computer savvy, I've been made to feel stupid at other libraries. These guys were so nice. Amazing isn't the word. This is my first time here, and the knowledge and support I've gotten is top tier. The help and services will keep me and my family here with something to do for the entire family. Great job. I love the Mustang Library so much. You all do such a great job. Shh. Why does no one understand the inside quiet whisper in libraries? Lots of homeless people this morning collecting signatures on petitions. They are rude. I won't come by until they are gone. Someone collecting signatures to put the Axon development plan on the ballot in front of Mustang Library on November 27th submitted a card with complaints. The commenter said she was getting signatures when someone in favor of Axon interrupted me two times. I had a witness that said she did, and I told a staff person. He did not remove her after I had him talk to the witness. She did it again, and I was told to leave. Unfair treatment. According to follow-up notes, a staff member talked to the signature gatherer and explained the City of Scottsdale procedure and expectations for those using city property to collect signatures. I shared that we had multiple complaints with patrons feeling accosted and caught in the middle of the two petitioners. Both petitioners were asked multiple times not to engage with each other, but the patron complaints continued. To stop the disruption to the service for library patrons, staff asked both petitioners to leave. Now that 26,000 plus signatures were submitted demanding the Axon issue be put on the ballot, City Council will be discussing the issue in the coming weeks. A city and county review process is underway. If at least 13,300 signatures are deemed valid, Axon's request for rezoning to allow for 1,800 apartments and condos will be on the November 2026 ballot, unless council calls a special election earlier. Axon is able to challenge any or all of the signatures via a civil lawsuit. New council. At 5 p.m. Tuesday, January 14th, after a swearing-in ceremony and inauguration featuring Borowski, the new council members, Jan Duboskis, Adam Quansman, and Marianne McAllen, then the mostly new council will meet. The agenda features Scottsdale Arts Construction Edition, an expansion construction agreement to add a new performance space at the Scottsdale Center for the Performing Arts. The cost of the project and other details were not available at press time. Also on the agenda is an agreement with Public Safety Crisis Solutions to provide traumatic event services on an as-needed basis to the City of Scottsdale fire and police members. And that article was titled, Light Meetings Week Ahead as 2025 Begins. Ortega complains of Borowski fraud by Tom Scanlon. Mayor David Ortega, trounced by Lisa Borowski in the November election, has been spending his last days in office poring over Borowski's nomination papers and crying fraud. Demanding an investigation, Ortega repeatedly alleged Borowski knew better but chose to submit fraudulent petitions. The outgoing mayor said his successor listed a false address on her campaign nomination papers nearly a year ago, and Ortega insists Borowski's signature gatherers illegally filled in addresses of those who signed support petitions. But attorney and election challenge expert Tim Lasota said Borowski, who won 54% of the votes to Ortega's 46%, did nothing wrong. Regarding Ortega's allegation that Borowski using a business address rather than a home address was illegal, Lasota said, "It's clearly okay to use a business address as long as it's in the district." He referred to the failed challenge against Shawna Bollock 4 years ago. Bollock's use of a post office box instead of a home address on her petitions was ruled appropriate by the Arizona Supreme Court. Lasota also shook his head over Ortega's claim signature gatherers, also known as circulators, illegally filled in addresses for Borowski. "They're allowed to do that on candidate petition under law," Lasota said. "It's not legal for a ballot measure. It's legal on a candidate petition," the attorney added. Over 20 years, Lasota said he's handled hundreds of election and challenges cases. He said he was baffled over Ortega's claims about Borowski. "Those allegations have absolutely zero merit," Lasota said. "They're just wrong." Laughing incredulously, Lasota added, "The other point is, it doesn't matter if it's okay at this point, if you don't make the challenge in a timely manner." Indeed, even Ortega allows the time for a challenge over spring nominations has been over for months, which makes his passionate inquiry all the more curious. Ortega investigation. Borowski and several other successful and unsuccessful candidates for Scottsdale office were puzzled last month after receiving notice from City Clerk Ben Lane that Ortega made public records requests for their nomination petitions. Before being placed on the primary ballot, candidates were required to file at least 1,000 signatures of support from Scottsdale registered voters. Ortega's December 11th records request for Borowski, Linda Milhaven, Jan Duboskis, Mason Gates, Adam Kwansman, and Marianne McAllen nomination petitions was followed within hours by a mass text message encouraging those who received it not to support a ballot petition drive against Axon. Ortega later told the Progress this was a coincidence, that his request had nothing to do with the Axon petition, led by former Councilman Bob Littlefield. An Axon spokesman confirmed that Ortega was not involved in their battle with Littlefield and company. "In order to wrap up the 2024 election data for my files, I walked into the clerk's office on December 11th, early morning, and requested for both mayoral petition files and then randomly picked some counsel as well for perspective," Ortega said in an email to the Progress. Asked how his action related to his duties as mayor, Ortega responded, "I requested as a citizen, as anyone has the right to do, and then walked upstairs to the office of the mayor to fulfill a variety of tasks." Ortega described his workday on December 11th. "I worked through lunch, departing the building about 2:45 p.m. Around lunchtime, I received a thumb drive with information requested and a paper version of Ordinance 4658. Ordinance 4658 is Council's approval of Axon's rezoning request to allow for 1,800 apartments and condos and a hotel, in addition to a previously approved new corporate office." Ortega himself made a link between his record requests and investigation of Borowski and the Axon petition drive. "Like many citizens, voters," Ortega wrote last month, "I've been bombarded by requests to sign a petition concerning Ordinance 4658. In particular, Protect Scottsdale openly solicits potential signatories to go to 7702 East Doubletree Ranch Road, the very address Lisa Borowski put on the fictitious petitions which are on record in perpetuity. The Progress later requested all the public records requests the mayor made from November 1st through December 15th. There are no responsive documents to your request, Kim Lank, an assistant with the city attorney's office, replied. When the Progress sent Lank a copy of Ortega's December 11th public records request, Lank apologized, adding, "This request was made directly to the clerk who had not yet entered it into the database." Lank was asked if making a request directly to the city clerk is unusual. "While the city prefers that public records requests be made through our online portal," Lank replied, "private citizens and others may make public records requests through a variety of means, including verbally, completing a hard copy city form, or by letter. In this case, Mr. Ortega made his request verbally, and the city clerk documented the request by completing the form." The Bolick case. In his December 12th email, signed David D. Ortega, citizen voter, Ortega claimed Borowski's nomination petition contains many unheard-of irregularities. Hundreds of signatures on 70 petition sheets bear a false candidate address. Most signatures are scribbled and in different handwriting than the addresses and dates. Ortega, a former councilman elected mayor in 2020, repeated his allegation that Borowski fraudulently used a business address. In 2020, Judith Lohr filed a challenge of Shauna Bolick petitions in the Republican primary for Legislative District 20. Bolick is currently a state senator representing Legislative District 2. After a Maricopa County Superior Court judge tossed out Lohr's claims that Bolick illegally used a post office box as her address, Lohr continued to appeal until the state's highest court affirmed the lower court ruling. Arizona Supreme Court Chief Justice Robert Brutinel issued a 7-page opinion on the Bolick case, noting, "Use of a private mailbox address, under the facts of this case, substantially complied with the statutory requirements for petitions and nomination papers. Bolick's use of a post office box did not cause electors signing her nomination petitions to be confused or misled about her identity," Brutinel wrote. "Providing an address in the district in which Bolick lives and seeks to represent also fulfills the purpose of the statutory address requirement, which is to ensure that a candidate resides in the county, district, or precinct that the person proposes to represent. Lasota commented that the Borowski's use of a business address in Scottsdale satisfies the requirement of a candidate for a city office residing in the city. As for circulators filling in addresses after residents have signed a petition, Lasota said state law requires disqualification for signatures where someone else printed signer's info on ballot measure petitions. But the attorney added, there is no corresponding authority in statute or law for candidate petition sheets. So, if there is no law saying you can't collect a certain way, that means signatures collected that way are valid. Election denier? In a December 17th email to the Progress, Ortega demanded an investigation of Borowski's petitions. In times when validity of nomination or referendum petition signatures may be questioned, it's relevant to call out a case such as Lisa Borowski's nomination petitions, he insisted. Borowski submitted two sets of petitions with different residences, one false, which are of public record. He doubled down on his suggestion of a sinister link between what Borowski used as a business address and the Littlefield groups. It's coincidental, or rather, is it coincidental, that the 7702 Doubletree Ranch Road place of Borowski residence listed in her false petitions is also the headquarter for the anti-Axon petition effort? Borowski and Littlefield say they do not share an office. Just off of Scottsdale Road, 7702 Doubletree Ranch Road is a three-story building with dozens of offices rented out individually. In numerous emails, Ortega continued to prod the Progress to dig into his allegations, accenting his writing with jibes. The title of an Ortega email sent a week before Christmas, "In the Age of Dubious Journalism, and your rumors are innuendos. On December 19th, Ortega emailed again, complaining the newspaper was not following up on his claims and making an allusion to the adult clubs owned by Borowski's brother. Obviously, you are rewarded by the Borowski clan, perhaps favors at their premises, Ortega wrote. On January 3rd, after the deadline of the print edition of this story, and 2 weeks after the original email, Ortega sent another email titled, Retracted, In the Age of Dubious Journalism and Your Rumors and Innuendos. He explained, he was writing to clear the air in 2025, and for the record, this email was sarcastic. I retract it with my apology. Good luck covering Mayor Borowski under the microscope for 4 years, the outgoing mayor added. Ortega also fired back at those who portray him as a lame duck leader, squandering his final days in office. I'm in tomorrow, December 20th, at 8:45 a.m. for several tasks and meetings in office, including with Drinkwater family, and later presenting key to the city in Old Town, Ortega wrote on December 19th. I have mayoral obligations up to January 13th, 2025. And the outgoing mayor insisted in another email, note all communications are on my personal email on personal time, not official business at all. That December 17th email was sent at 2:08 p.m. Ortega's Borowski irregularities email from his scottsdalearchitect@gmail.com was sent at 1:42 p.m. December 12th. Ortega sent a half dozen other emails before noon, or rather between noon and 5:30 p.m. on various days. Though he refuses to back down from his claims of Borowski's fraudulent nomination petitions, Ortega said he's not an election denier. In a December 30th email, Ortega said he was wrapping up election research when an irregularity in his opinion popped up. The discovery appeared well after the statutory legal time frame expired to question validity, he acknowledged. The election is over, Ortega wrote. Mayor-elect Borowski will take office January 14th, 2025. As he earlier wrote, the election is final, and my term ends in January 2025. Still, he pondered if Borowski, filing two sets of petitions, one with a business address and one with her home address, sets a precedent. Ortega acknowledged he did not report his concerns to the city attorney or any county or state election representative. There's no recourse or effort or action implied by me, Ortega said, other than revealing the fraudulent signatures presented by candidate Lisa Borowski. Borowski shrugged off Ortega's claims about her nomination petitions. There's nothing to comment on, she said. I did everything according to state law. The new mayor invites the public to an inauguration celebration for Borowski and new council members Duboskis, Quansman, and McAllen at 3 p.m. January 14th at the Scottsdale Center for the Performing Arts. And that article was titled, Ortega Complains of Borowski Fraud. Visitors continue to spend big in Scottsdale by Progress News staff. The money keeps rolling into Scottsdale. Rachel Smentana, the city's new tourism and events director, gave a generally upbeat presentation to the city's Tourism Development Commission on December 17th. For the annual budget beginning in July, she expects $36 million in bed tax and other revenues. Smentana projects a slight increase in bed tax revenue, up from $32 million the previous year. The Scottsdale Fairmont Princess lease will be around $3.2 million. We are very happy to hear of the Princess's approval for their expansion, she noted, referring to Scottsdale City Council giving the green light to the resort last month. Where will the $36 million in tourism-related taxes be spent? Experience Scottsdale will receive an estimated $14.5 million for destination marketing. Operating expenses for Smentana's department will be just under $2 million. And just under $3 million will go to events and event development. She said 4% of her budget is reserved for administration and research. Smentana, a former chief of staff of the mayor's office, says she's only been in her new position for a few months and somewhat overwhelmed by the budget process. I can't wait to do this next year, when I will be good at this, she cracked. and that article was titled, Visitors Continue to Spend Big in Scottsdale. Now for an opinion piece from the Paradise Valley Independent, titled, A Celebration of Hope and Unity in Paradise Valley, by Rachel Wright. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. once said that we must accept finite disappointment, but never lose infinite hope. These words have remained relevant long since they were spoken, and are more relevant than ever in 2024. Amongst a now infinite stream of headlines espousing political turmoil, it can be hard to hold on to the message of hope and unity that Dr. King preached. However, exactly when all hope seems to be lost is exactly when hope is needed most. Americans' concern for the future of this nation may be infinite, but through the words he spoke into the legacy of amplified humanity, Dr. King urges us to keep our hope even more boundless. Martin Luther King Jr. Day is a celebration, a reflection, and a challenge to make good on Dr. King's dream of hope and hopefulness for this nation and this world. On this day, we come together with our communities and celebrate the life of someone who led the fight for equality and change in America over 5 decades ago, and whose actions and words continue to inspire us to carry on this fight into the 21st century. Now, more than ever, Americans must fight for equality in our nation, not just on the personal and social levels, but the systematic level. We can promote equality in our communities, but the institutions that govern us will not do the same. While systemic racism may not be as overt today as it was with segregation in Dr. King's day, it is no less insidious and no less poisonous to the ideal of a united America that we all hope for. A justice system that incentivizes the incarceration of people of color through removing their voting rights. An education system that forbids teaching anything but the sanitized versions of history. And a healthcare system that privileges white patients over patients of color are not just harmful to those they discriminate against, their existence eats away at the foundations of democracy for all Americans. In these times of struggle, we may feel that we are further than ever from becoming the unified nation Dr. King spoke of in his I Have a Dream speech, the nation where children, as well as adults, can be judged for their character rather than their socio-cultural background. In the face of this uncertainty, it can be easy to lose hope. However, hope does not come without action. The battle against racism is not fought by standing passively when racist behavior rears its ugly head, hoping that change will come soon enough. It is fought through active anti-racism, standing up for what's right, and becoming part of the change needed in the world. Indeed, hope is not some fragile butterfly flittering gracefully down onto one's head like an angel's feather. Hope is an active verb, something you have to go out and make yourself. In his I Have a Dream speech, Dr. King states, "We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy." Martin Luther King Day Jr., Martin Luther King Jr. Day provides an opportunity to look inward at how one combats racism every day. It also affords an opportunity to look outward at what one can do to make steps towards unity and equality in their communities. Martin Luther King Jr. Day is a day for action. Reader, what are you doing to make real promises of democracy and champion hope in your communities? Please join us for the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. celebration on Monday, January 20th at 11 a.m. This event will take place at the Paradise Valley Town Hall, located at 6401 East Lincoln Drive. And that opinion piece was written by Rachel Wright, and it's titled A Celebration of Hope and Unity in Paradise Valley. And here's another opinion piece titled Paradise Valley Residents Are Giving Back in a Variety of Ways, by Kathleen Clifford. Once again, Jay Ross complains that the town of Paradise Valley isn't doing its part to help those in need in the Phoenix Metro. His previous letter showed a lack of understanding of where the town borders are. The most recent letter shows a lack of understanding of the budgeting process for our small municipality. Hint, much of the budget comes from resorts, not residents. He continues with a calculation that the per-resident contribution to help homelessness is only $20. He casts our community in a poor light when residents like me support many charities, churches, synagogues, and worthy organizations in our immediate community and the greater Phoenix area. Good works include helping homelessness, food insecurity, and pet shelters. Residents are very aware of need and choose how and where to donate. And that opinion piece was titled, Paradise Valley Residents Are Giving Back in a Variety of Ways. And here is Jay Ross's opinion piece that article was referring to. It's titled, Will Paradise Valley Do Its Part for the Homeless? Paradise Valley is giddy to use the recent court decision to quickly pass an ordinance that prohibits homeless people from camping in the town. But we make minimal effort to actually solve the problem and help the homeless and find shelter. Our town contributed a meager $250,000 to Maricopa County last year for homeless services. We are one of the richest towns in the country, with an average household income of $150,000, and we can afford only $20 per person? Mayor Jerry Bien Wilner said we will contribute based on our town's budget, but our household incomes can certainly afford to double that to $500,000 every year. How about it, new Mayor Stanton? As the richest town in Arizona, will we do our part to solve the homeless crisis? And that was an opinion piece titled, Will Paradise Valley Do Its Part for the Homeless? You've been listening to the East Valley News featuring the towns of Scottsdale and Paradise Valley. Did you know your favorite programs can be heard anytime on demand at sunsounds.org? I'm your volunteer reader, Chris Rosewell. Have a great rest of your day.